Welcome to episode 338 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm your host and producer, Josh Pollard.
And I'm your host, Richard Gunther. And this is the show where we talk about Microsoft Entertainment technology, including audio, video gaming, and more across all Windows platforms. Josh, you threw me. You're back.
I am back. I'm not quite sure if I should be back. I still don't feel like I'm where I should be for podcasting, but I can't be away from the show for that long. I was gone for 3 weeks, then I took another week off right after I got back. I got to come back and talk about this stuff.
Well, I will say, despite missing you, I had a great time recording with Corey. He held your seat very nicely.
It was a fun show to listen to. I'm glad that you found a fill-in because you guys made a good episode. And it was unusual because I actually listened to the show for like the first time in a really long time. All right. Well, we've got one piece of listener feedback to cover tonight. It was sent in from Jose. He did that by emailing us at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com.
All right. Well, Jose says, after upgrading to Windows 10, I noticed that my user ID and password were no longer working when trying to access my Drobo 5N. I could see the network shares, but it would say that my credentials were invalid. Shares that were public, in other words, those that did not require a username or password, were fully accessible. The solution was to use the workgroup domain qualifier before the username. Windows 10 appears to try to use your local machine name as the domain name for the username. So if the PC you're connecting from is called My Computer, it tries to log in as mycomputer/user, which obviously doesn't exist on that NAS. By using the workgroup or domain qualifier, you're able to override the default and the credentials are handled properly. For those who have a NAS that doesn't utilize the workgroup, try NAS/user, where NAS is the name of your NAS box. Keep in mind, I'm coming from Windows 7, so it's possible this method of logging in started with Win 8, and I never came across it. But just in case anyone out there was also in the dark, I figured I would share this information. Jose, this is great information. I actually have not yet tried to access my Drobo that I have on my network through my Windows 10 tablet yet. So I'm going to have to give this a try, but I think this is good information to know. Have you ever experienced this in Windows 8, or do you have any sort of NAS that you would otherwise connect to on your network?
I don't really have any other NAS devices. All of my devices on my network are Windows devices, and most of them are everything that's Windows 8 or newer was using my Microsoft account, and it just worked. The only exception being my Windows 7 Media Center box, and that one, I just use a regular username and password, and I can't remember. I don't think I typically have to put the machine name in, but I've been around the networking world long enough that I knew to try this sort of thing. So that's what I would have tried. But for people who don't do a lot of networking all the time, this is not something that would be immediately obvious to them. So thank you to Jose for sharing that tip.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. So that's it for our feedback this week. At the end of the show, we'll give you lots of ways that you can reach us to send us more feedback or helpful tips like Jose did.
So Josh, I kind of want to start the discussion about video with a bit of a mixed media post that CNET had. And I know that we've talked over time, like over the course of multiple episodes, about the different formats that are going to be supported and some of the changes coming in media playback in Windows 10. But perhaps somewhat surprisingly, I thought CNET did a very good job of summarizing those features. And I thought it made sense to talk through these a little bit.
No, I think that's a great idea because you're right. We have talked about a lot of these in the past, but they've all been spread out over time. And frankly, I even forgot about some of these. So it's a good idea to recap these for all of the listeners, many of whom are just now getting onto Windows 10, maybe for the very first time. So nice to know that these features are there because they weren't in previous versions. The first one is, if you're on Windows 10 and you are an audiophile and have a big collection of FLAC, F-L-A-C, lossless audio, that format is now, for the first time in Windows, supported natively. They'll just play right inside of Windows Media Player and all of the other media playback apps that are built into Windows 10, which is great news if you're into that lossless audio format.
Yeah, that's very good news. Another format that we've talked about is Matroska Video, MKVs. And now, this may not be new to people who have been using Windows 8, or more specifically, Windows 8.1, because that was introduced in Windows 8.1. But again, as a reminder, MKV format is also natively supported and will play in the Movies and TV app directly in Windows 10.
That's true. And while I haven't actually even given this a try yet, I've seen some tweets from others that the MKV splitter that they've implemented in Windows 10 is really good. So definitely worth checking out if you've got a big collection of MKV files. Next up, if MKV just isn't enough for you, maybe you've got a 4K monitor. Maybe you're looking at HEVC files or H.265, commonly used in 4K video formats, also natively supported in Windows 10.
That's just crazy.
It is. Well, it is and it isn't. Like, it has to be. Like, Windows is always trying to keep up with the next big things that are coming. And HEVC is definitely the next major video container, and H.265 being the next majorly supported compression algorithm. So really good to see. It's going to need to be there because 4K video is already taking off pretty big. So good to see that one too.
For sure. Now, another change, and this may be less welcomed by you depending on how you liked the way things worked before in Windows, the play to verb that appears in some menus, specifically if you're browsing and you bring up the properties menu, or rather the context menu for a specific file, play to a device has been renamed to cast. So now in your file system, you would find a file and right-click on it, and one of the options is now going to be cast, and then you select the device that you're going to cast it to. I don't like this. I don't like it because it's tortured English.
Yeah, I don't care that much because I just don't think people use this very often. This is how you do DLNA in Windows. It's how you've done DLNA in Windows since Windows 7, but it's such a terrible way of doing it. Like, I have to right-click on a file in Windows Explorer, just not the most user-friendly way of trying to stream some audio or video to another device.
Yeah, that's a good point. Good point. And then I know we've mentioned this before, but as a reminder, Windows 10 does not have a DVD player built into it unless you happen to have upgraded from one of the versions that was eligible for the automatic installation for free of the Windows 10 DVD player. So you're going to be without that if you're upgrading from one of the ineligible versions, but that may not be a problem to a lot of people, depending on what you're using your computer for. You know, if you have a tablet, for example, it may not be something that you care about.
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, if you just have a tablet or most of the new Ultrabooks and stuff, you're not even going to have that DVD drive anyway. And that's how most computers are coming nowadays. So probably not that big of a deal.
Yeah.
If it is a big deal to you and you didn't qualify for the free upgrade, you can buy it. That's good news, right?
Sure.
For the low, low price of $15?
And this is where Richard's head explodes.
Yeah.
Josh, how much did Windows Media Center cost in Windows 8?
Well, you know, let's actually go back, because why do we even compare it to Media Center? Because Media Center played DVDs. So
as one of you know, dozens of other things that it did.
Right. It did lots and lots of things. But one of the core things was playing DVDs. So let's go back to Windows 7. How much did Media Center cost in Windows 7? Nothing.
Nothing.
In Windows 8, you did have to pay for it. And it was a grand total of $10. $10.
And we had posited that one of the reasons that you probably had to pay for it was the licensing for the audio codecs. And those codecs are necessary for DVD playback.
Right. Absolutely. And that made sense. And we were willing to pay $10 to cover the cost of the licensing of those and get all of those extra features that Windows Media Center brought. But to pay another 50% more than that just to be able to play DVDs. And as you and Corey mentioned last week, this app does nothing other than play DVDs.
Physical DVDs only.
Right. No ISOs, nothing. Just
no DVDs.
No DVDs
from a DVD drive on another computer somewhere on the network. Local physical DVDs only.
Yeah. So how about we not buy that? You got a better solution for people who still want to play DVDs?
Well, yeah, remember VLC? And I'm not talking about the Windows version of the app that's in the store. That I even noticed that Ian had a post about this. Ian Dixon had a post on the Digital Lifestyle about how the new update was out and it's a great version of the app. That's wonderful. That's not the one that you want to play DVDs. Get the desktop version of VLC and it will play DVDs for you.
There you go. And it's free.
And it is free.
And plays about everything else ever made.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So there you go. We've got Sola Sweet in the chat who apparently is not a VLC fan. I don't think VLC is the greatest app in the world either, but it does do what it needs to do.
It is the rough and dirty, slightly rusty in some places, Swiss Army knife that you inherited from your big brother or your father or grandfather or something. And it's always going to be there and it can do a million different things, but it's not the primary tool you would use for, you know, doing a big job around your house.
Right. Absolutely. All right. Well, we also moving on to maybe happier news. And that is a little bit of a follow-up from last week's big announcement that DVR functionality will be coming to the Xbox One. We got just a couple more tidbits of information that will be important if you're interested in this. The first one is that while we know that, you know, you're supposed to plug in an extra hard drive and that's where the recordings will go, there's two extra things about that. The first one is it's required. You will not be able to record to your local, you know, the internal hard drive in your Xbox One. And that's fine. I think that's cool. That makes sense because
I think we knew that, but I think we misstated that last week.
Yeah, I don't think you stated that it was required, but it's definitely required. The other thing about it is that it has to be a completely standalone drive. So if you've already got an external drive that you've got plugged in that you're storing games on, that won't work. You're going to need another external drive to store just your recordings on.
It makes sense. I mean, you don't want anything competing with the I/O that your gaming device is using for its primary purpose.
Yeah, exactly. So the other thing that we learned is who's going to get this first? I might have expected that the US wouldn't because we were last to get the tuner, but well, Microsoft's an American company. So we're first, Richard. It's us, the United States, Canada, and the UK will get this functionality first with other regions to follow. I'm sure all of the regions that have the tuner now will eventually get this, but it sounds like they're going to roll it out fairly shortly. That's all we've got. We still don't have dates or anything like that, but a couple little pieces of information to fill you in on what's going on with the Xbox One DVR functionality.
I'm really impressed about the fact that Canada is getting it, not because that's a stretch by any means, but because Canada so often gets ignored with stuff like this. So this is nice to see.
Absolutely. All right. So I got somewhat drug into an interesting Twitter conversation over
the
weekend.
That's the exact verb that I was going to use.
Someone is asking me about the Silicon Dust HD DVR, and I replied talking about how I don't have the tuner. I've been way too busy to even try this stuff this summer anyway.
So then you dragged me into the conversation.
Well, yeah, because you've got HD home run tuners. So everyone's just getting drug in here. And Silicon Dust jumped right into that conversation and had a couple of interesting tweets to share that I certainly wasn't expecting. So their first one, when we were, you know, the conversation spread to talking about bringing HD home run DVR functionality to the Xbox One, and Silicon Dust replied with, "Please help us beg Xbox to turn on network tuner support and life will be grand."
I agree. Life would be grand.
Yeah, I really, really like that idea. Apparently, they've tried to talk to Microsoft about this and they've gotten absolutely no response. So not the best news there. But they also replied with to a later tweet that this still works via DLNA until the Xbox turns on network tuner support, not for a lack of trying. So that tweet's a little bit harder to parse, but basically saying the same thing, that they're really trying to get Microsoft to support network tuners, but it's not working. So if you want it, which Richard, you do, I do, lots of our listeners do, let's start banging on the doors to Xbox with that. I'm pretty sure there's a story out there already on the Xbox User Voice site. And if there isn't, maybe we should go make one. But I think there is. I mean, I know there's some that could be construed that way. So, and we've seen lots and lots and lots of upvotes on the DVR related stories on the Xbox User Voice site already.
Yeah, you know, it may be time to revisit that, because I know that we haven't paid a lot of attention to that after the last round of Xbox announcements. It would be interesting to see how things are tracking there. And I think what we should do is, when this show comes out, you know, we had a couple people retweet our retweets of Silicon Dust post on Twitter. I think we should retweet this again or mention it again so that it kind of gets to the top of our feed, and then ask listeners to please check out our feed, find this, and retweet it, because we want Microsoft to pay attention to this.
Absolutely. That's really the ideal that I'm looking for. I don't want to have a home theater PC anymore. I want to have my Xbox, and that's it. I know.
Blasphemy.
I know. It's craziness, but that's what I want. So, but for those of you wondering, you know, what's going on with HD Home Run DVR and what's our experience with it? Well, we don't have any yet, but we will soon. So stay tuned, and we'll, in the coming episodes, be talking about some of our experience with that. But know that it's not done. You know, they're not ready for it. They're rolling this out in essentially alpha stages to Kickstarter backers now, with a more beta level release that they're targeting for September, and then not the official release until later this fall. So give them time. They're not done yet, but I'm sure there's good things coming for those of us who are interested in the HD Home Run DVR.
Good, good. Hey, Josh, are you an Audible listener?
I'm not. I should be, but I'm not.
So I'm an Audible subscriber, and I think what I should really be described as is an Audible hoarder.
I just can't imagine you hoarding digital content. That just doesn't sound like you, Richard.
I know. Isn't that so out of character? Oh, wait. Like most of my DVR content that I still haven't watched, I still haven't listened to most of the purchases that I've made in Audible. And I really mean that I've been a subscriber and I've been receiving books from them through that program. And I keep on telling myself, yeah, someday on that road trip. I don't take road trips anymore. In fact, I have an opportunity to take a road trip this weekend, and I'm not doing it. I'm flying.
Well, you could still listen on the airplane.
Yeah, but it's an hour as opposed to five, right?
Oh, so, that's true.
I don't know. Anyway, the good news for those people who are active Audible listeners is, if you may remember, we had complained about the fact that the Audible apps on the Windows platforms were either kind of disappointing or going away. And they now have an updated app for Windows 10 that is a universal app, and it looks really sweet. It's universal, meaning it will work theoretically everywhere. And for now, that means Windows 10, and it will mean Windows 10 on mobile devices. So I'm glad to see this back. I was concerned that they were kind of abandoning the platform.
Well, we knew that they were working on a Windows 10 app when they pulled the Windows 8.1 app earlier this year. So I'm just glad that they released it so quickly. You know, they could have drugged their feet on this, but they didn't. And all of the news about this app is really good. Like I said, not an Audible subscriber, so I haven't tried this. I don't really have a good way of trying this. But if I am reading this article from winbeta.org correctly, it sounds like they re-released this app on Windows Phone 8.1. So you don't have to wait for Windows 10 mobile on your phone to check this out. It sounds like the mobile app on Windows Phone 8.1 is updated and available and a lot better than it used to be. So really, really great news if you're an Audible listener. And hopefully other companies are going to follow suit with the path that Audible took here and make a really great new universal app for everything Windows 10.
I think that was our combined mobile and audio segments for the evening.
Well, Richard, this must be one of your favorite shows of the year because we have no gaming news to talk about. So why don't we just move on to another piece of interesting Microsoft news? And that's what Microsoft is doing around Windows RT. Anybody remember Windows RT? Anybody?
I do. I thought it was the only good version of Windows 8 that they ever created.
Ouch. Dang. All right. So Windows RT, of course, the version of Windows 8 that was released for ARM-powered tablets. So the most popular, of course, being the Surface RT and the Surface 2. There were a few others out there, but not many, and none of those got much love from consumers. So we've discussed earlier in prior episodes that Windows 10 not coming to Windows RT devices. It's not going to happen. They're kind of giving up on this platform for the most part, but not entirely, because Microsoft announced this week they are going to do a couple more updates for Windows RT. They're going to bring a new start menu to Windows RT, but it's not going to be the same as the start menu in Windows 10. So frankly, that has me more nervous than excited, because the start screen works pretty well in Windows RT on a tablet. And then they're also going to update the lock screen. I would imagine they'll just basically port the lock screen from Windows 10 to Windows RT, which I like the new lock screen. It works pretty well. It's got some nice new features. That would be a welcome improvement. You're not going to get like Windows Hello features. You're not suddenly going to be signing in with, you know, the camera on the front of your Surface RT looking at a picture of your face, but you're going to get a couple of updates there. So that'll be nice. These are coming in September. Now, the one downside to all of this is kind of a big downside. So remember those really cool Windows 10 universal apps, like that Audible app we were just talking about?
Yeah, you're not going to get those.
Nope, not supported at all on the updated version of Windows RT coming in September, because you're still not getting Windows 10. And those apps require the actual Windows 10 core, and you aren't going to have that. So if you're like me, and you've still got a Windows RT tablet that you're using, well, you might not be using it as long as, you know, once these apps start to get updated to new universal Windows apps, those apps just aren't going to work on the RT anymore. Not cool.
I think that this is a little bit confusing right now as far as what apps work on what platform. If you go to the Windows Store, which has been redesigned, and I know that that happened sometime in the last couple of weeks, but I don't think we actually talked about it. That store shows you all the apps available. And I'll use as an example, and maybe this is not a good example because this release has been a big old mess, but the Insteon app for Windows is listed in there saying to use this app, upgrade to Windows 10. And yet it runs on Windows 8. So I don't quite understand how people are going to know what's going to work where.
That was my thought too, is, you know, you're going to go to the store, and I mean, hopefully that the store on RT devices just won't even show universal Windows apps that are Windows 10 only. But even that is a little bit confusing when you know that an app exists and you go to the store and you just can't find it, and then you're not going to know why it's not there.
Right.
But maybe it doesn't matter because there aren't many of us RT device toting people left in the world.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry to see this. I think that if I owned an RT device, I would have no incentive to take this upgrade.
Well, this upgrade isn't going to prevent you from doing anything. It's just that you're not going to get a huge amount of things out of it.
Yeah, but frankly, I wouldn't want them screwing up my start menu, because the start menu experience in Windows 8 worked fine if you were on a tablet.
Yeah. Yeah, I do agree with that. This is, I guess I just hope that it'll be customizable, that maybe if they're messing it up, I can disable some of that stuff, hopefully. But I don't know. It's going to be Windows updates that, you know, you can, well, since we're not on Windows 10, we can say no to those updates, but you might have to do a little work to keep from getting them on there. So we'll just have to wait and see what those updates look like. Hopefully they don't screw up the start menu while they're messing with everything else.
You're going to have to be the guinea pig for us.
Right. Since I'm the only one with an RT device here. All right. So some other industry news. This one, we have to go way, way, way back for. So Richard, you and I, we've been doing home theater PCs for, you know, like a decade or more. And way, way back in the mid-2000s, I think you'd have to say that the biggest competitor to Windows Media Center had to be Sage TV.
Yeah.
It had a boatload of features, frankly, way more features than Windows Media Center had. It was way more customizable than Windows Media Center was, but it also didn't look that pretty. And, you know, there were just some other things that obviously you and I didn't like. Cable card eventually came around, and it sort of got cable card support, but never for protected content.
And much later even than Media Center did, if I remember correctly.
I believe so. And then in 2011, I can't believe it was that long ago, but in 2011, Google bought Sage TV. We all presumed that they were buying it to bolster some of their TV-focused projects like Google TV and then eventually Android TV. And we think that some of that Sage technology ended up in there. But what Google definitely did with Sage TV is shut the whole thing down, like immediately. As soon as Google bought Sage TV, you couldn't buy Sage TV anymore. So if you had a previous license of it, you could still be running it. But for the most part, they kind of just killed it. And there went the best competitor to Media Center in 2011. Then we reported back in March that one of the developers, who we presume still works at Google, had mentioned in the Sage TV forums, which are still around, surprisingly, that Google was looking to open source the project. They had no details on timing other than to say they were hoping to do this within the next few months, not something like years out. Well, it was only a few months, because this week, Google actually open sourced Sage TV. You can go to Google's GitHub and find their Sage TV repository and download all of the source code for Sage TV. Now, this is source code. It's not like you can go to this GitHub page and download some zip file that has an executable in there to just run the setup and be on your merry way with Sage TV again. It's not that easy. It's source code. You have to know what you're doing, how to build this into something you could actually use. And there's like 33 steps here, just in their instructions for how you might actually use this. So if you're a developer and you're familiar with Java code and C++ code and using Visual Studio 2005, or maybe you're a Linux developer, this could work for you. But for right now, this is a non-starter for anyone who's not a developer. I'm sure that people are going to grab this and put up compiled binaries that you could download fairly soon. But I haven't done it yet. So I guess the big question here, Richard, is are we actually going to see a resurgence of Sage TV now that the source code's available?
That's such a rough one. When stuff goes open source, it's hard to know what's going to happen to it. It could get forked a million times and nobody actually ends up with something that could be productized well. I would love to see some company that's working on a box decide to maybe take this as opposed to Android TV and bake it into their solution and see what they could come up with. The user experience has always been the piece that's been missing with Sage TV as far as I was concerned. And if that's something that a creative product company could overcome, we could get something pretty cool out of this.
We could, but we're probably still pretty unlikely to get copy protected cable card support out of it, unless some other, you know, big name company wants to do that effort, because there's still all the licensing requirements and certification from cable labs to even support that. Something that no other HTPC software out there other than Windows Media Center has done.
Wasn't someone saying it's like $10,000 or $100,000 or something like that to get that licensing?
I think it's like $25,000.
It's ridiculous. You know, the licensing stuff on video is just killing me. And, you know, I was listening to a news show today talking about how the Blu-ray spec is final for 4K and it's ready to be licensed. I'm like, ugh! Makes me crazy.
Well, so I think I'm in the exact same boat as you. I don't really know. I mean, we're seeing a little bit of activity around this GitHub repository. There's been a few forks. There's been a couple of issues posted. So, and over at the Sage TV forums, they've got a new section in the forums for this open source project. And there's a little bit of activity over there. So we'll see. But I don't know. I don't think we're going to see anything major come out of this. I mean, maybe the one crazy possibility would be if, like, Silicon Dust decided, let's scoop this up and we can integrate a bunch of this into HD Home Run DVR. But I don't see that happening. They're theoretically so far along on their product that they probably wouldn't want to have to try and make all this old code fit in with the new stuff, because this is all based on Java. So I'm going to bet the HD Home Run DVR not built on Java, but I could be wrong about that too. I don't know.
All right. Well, that is it for the news, huh?
Yeah, that's it. Pretty short on the news tonight, but you know, I think a lot of people really, really enjoy the discussion at the end of the show where we talk about what we've been doing, and there's plenty going on in our entertainment centers. So let's jump into that.
All right, well, I'll get started on that. And I actually did some physical hardware stuff.
What?
I mean, it was easy. It involved plugging something in. But you may remember I'd been trying to get an external drive to work on my Xbox 360. And that way before even the ability to do that was there, I was having problems doing that. And then after the ability to do that was there, I was still having problems doing that. I never figured that out. And then it occurred to me that I had a spare USB 3 2 terabyte drive just sitting on my desk that I hadn't used for the purpose I had purchased it for, probably some more digital hoarding. And I thought, well, what better way to use this than for, you know, specifically for digitally hoarding games? So I took it out of the box, plugged it into the Xbox 360. And sure enough, I was able to format it, and it works great. Now I've been able to download all of the games that I have been purchasing. Can I just say, you know, I don't have a whole lot of experience downloading games on the 360, but oh my gosh, is that process slow?
I don't remember how slow it is. I haven't even turned an Xbox 360 on in at least 6 months, at least, but probably more than that.
Yeah, I could not believe how long it took to download the games. Hours for the couple of games that I had to download. Like, I had maybe half a dozen, and it took hours. I could not believe it. Anyway, with my 360 on, I figured, hey, I'm in my office. I have some work that I need to monitor. Maybe I should watch something on my media center. I'll set up this 360 as an extender. I hadn't done that yet. Turns out I had, in my old house, 3 years ago. It remembered.
Nice. Maybe.
So I just loaded the extender app, and boom, there's my media center. And because I'm not on wireless in this new office, it worked better than it ever had. It was like I was right at my media center. No delay, no load time. It was awesome. So I think I am reinvigorated in my enthusiasm for the Xbox 360 as an extender.
It's a good experience. I mean, obviously you don't get some of the extra plugins like Netflix, which
like Netflix that's going the way
doesn't really matter at this point. But yeah, it works pretty well.
It does. And I found out for the first time, because I didn't own this 3 years ago, that recorded TV HD also seamless, works perfectly.
Awesome.
So good news there. Now, what have I been watching? A lot of the usual stuff. I haven't really started anything new since the last time we spoke. So Big Brother, Tyrant, the summer shows that I'm normally watching, really enjoying Mr. Robot. But, well, I think as of the recording of this show, I'm now 2 episodes behind. I was 1 episode behind last night. And I had mentioned last week that I had restarted watching Eureka, and I watched a couple more episodes of that. That's a fun, enjoyable, lighthearted, geeky show. So I hope to finish that up in the coming weeks. And that's pretty much been it for me. So how about you, Josh?
All right. Well, on your recommendation and that of many others, I also started Mr. Robot, especially while I was sick. And wow, that is a really good show. I've really enjoyed it. I'm current up until this week's episode. And yeah, I mean, there's only been only even a couple of scenes that I haven't really enjoyed. So yeah, I really like this show. Christian Slater is such a fantastic, crazy person. He's he's just so good at that. Whoever the main actor is does such an awesome job portraying that character. I really love how he's done that character. It's just a really, really good show. Liking that a lot. One other thing that I've watched of recently, and this was, I think, also while I was sick, I watched the movie American Sniper. It's one I had wanted to see, you know, basically since it came out, but I never did, never made it to the theaters, which is where I would like to see a movie like that. And then, of course, watching big, loud action movies is harder at home, but I found time, I found a way to do it, and holy cow, was that a good movie. Like, I'm not going to spoil anything. And, you know, there's, you know, it's based on the, you know, a real American sniper in the U.S. military, a Navy SEAL. And around the time this movie came out, there was some other stuff related to this story that hit the news. I had somehow miraculously kept from knowing any of that news. So when that factors into the actual movie, because it does, it was huge. It was such a good movie. If you don't know the full story, or, well, really any of the story of American Sniper, it's all the more reason to go and watch this movie. It is so good. You really need to watch it if you're into war movies, especially since it's based on real stuff. So I loved it. Have you seen that movie?
I haven't yet. It's Cooper, isn't it? Bradley Cooper?
Yes.
Yeah, I really want to see it. He is kind of turning out to be the great new actor of our time, I think.
Yeah.
He's done a lot of really quite amazing roles. You know, he had a bunch of fluff pieces and some comedy and some rom-com stuff, and he's taken on a couple of really good roles the last couple of films he's been in.
And do you know the news story of the stuff at the end of American Sniper?
I don't think that I do, unless this is going to like bring it back to memory.
Okay. Well, then you probably don't, and you probably won't until the end then. So you should go and watch this. It's really good.
Cool.
All right. Also, a little bit of device upgrading around the house. I'm now running Windows 10 on everything except for my media center machine, obviously. That's still Windows 7 and will remain Windows 7 for a long time. Got the upgrade notification on my main PC. Did the upgrade. Went flawlessly. It's what I'm using now. It's been great. Surface Pro, on the other hand, had to use an ISO. Did the upgrade. Upgrade seemed to go fine. But then everybody said, well, once you've done it, if you can, you should really do the PC reset and give yourself the clean install experience. And I thought, why not? I just set this thing up anyway. I'm not going to lose anything. Let's do that. So I did that on Saturday. And then it didn't boot at all. It gave me blue screens about missing partitions or something. I don't know. I don't even remember what the error message was. And I thought, okay, I guess I'll try the reset again. And it didn't work. And I thought, okay, then I guess the next step is to download the recovery image again and do the Windows 8.0 recovery install. Yeah, that didn't work either. And that's when I really started to worry. And after many hours of trying some things, I thought, all right, fine, let's just use that Windows 10 ISO, see if I can install Windows 10. Maybe it'll fix whatever's going on with the partitions or whatever. And it probably won't activate, and I'll have to start over again, but maybe I'll at least be able to start over again. So I installed Windows 10 from the ISO and skipped both of the prompts where it asked for a product key, got all installed, and then lo and behold, it was activated because I think it stores the product key in the firmware or something like that. So it just worked. And now I've got a perfectly functioning Surface Pro 1 with Windows 10 on it. And it's, well, it's as good as you can expect Windows 10 on a tablet device, which we've talked about plenty in the past. All right, one last thing for this week, and that is it's my week for a podcast pick. And this is kind of good timing because I was looking for something new to listen to this weekend because I kind of ran out of all my regular shows. And I found an interesting one. It's called The Moth, which really doesn't tell you at all what it's about. Apparently, The Moth is like a club in New York, I think it is, where it's sort of like stand-up, but not really. The tagline for this is True Stories Told Live. So it's a weekly show that's recorded either as a radio show or in front of a live audience at a theater. And people get up on stage and tell short, real stories about their lives. And sometimes they're funny and sometimes they're not. And sometimes they're good and sometimes they're not. But it's just a really interesting storytelling podcast. You know, you're not going to get news out of it or anything like that. But it's an entertaining show. So worth maybe listening to a couple of episodes and seeing if you like the storytelling. And if not, hey, at least it didn't cost you anything. That's the beauty of podcasting, I suppose.
That's cool. Yeah, I think a couple of weeks ago I recommended a storytelling podcast, and I'm generally not a storytelling person, and meaning that I am neither into storytelling, like telling the stories, or into listening to storytelling, but I really enjoyed it. And it's interesting, this seems to be a type of podcast content that's becoming more and more popular.
Yeah, I mean, I when I first read the description, I thought, oh, so it's sort of like This American Life, but really short and done by non-professionals. And it's probably not anywhere near that. but there were some fun and entertaining stories, so you might enjoy it. It's worth a quick listen, at least. There, and the episodes, like I said, are weekly and around an hour long. So that's what you're getting yourself into with The Moth.
Very cool. today I was listening to your recommendation for a podcast last time, Undisclosed, sitting aghast at the egregious practices of the Baltimore police. Unbelievable.
You know, I'm actually starting to burn out on that show a little bit. I was listening to it too, and it just seems like at this point it's like, okay, we get it. Every single week, it's about how terrible of a job the cops did and the lawyers did and how a lot of it's probably super corrupt. But it doesn't feel like it's going anywhere.
Yeah, I don't know. And, you know, they just announced that they're going to cover other cases. And I have to wonder how good that's going to be. You know, I almost wonder if it's going to kind of go through that startup thing where the first season about them is great. When they're focusing on someone else, are they going to still have that passion?
Right, exactly. That would be my concern with it too. All right, well, I think that's going to do it for this week. So if you would like to reach out to us, you can do that in a lot of different ways. We're on Twitter. You can drag us into your Twitter conversations by tweeting at Richard Gunther or at Josh Pollard. If you want to follow the website, it's at DigiMediaZone, D-I-G-I MediaZone. We're also on Facebook, so you can like our page over at facebook.com/thedmz. We're on Google+, including that Windows Media Center community, which has been rather active of late, you know, for Media Center being dead and all. Not really. You can also email us entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. Check out some of our other podcasts. The End User's on a little bit of a break right now, but Home On isn't, your other show about home automation and control. What's going on with the latest Home On?
Yeah, we had what I think was a pretty fun conversation in the latest episode with Men's Health Tech Editor Greg Stebbin. He was talking about how he's using smart locks and smart air conditioning and smart thermostats and smart lighting in rental properties and how he wishes he could tie it all together. Yeah, don't we all?
Fun show. Just listened to it this morning. Oh, great. You know it's going to be a good podcast when you get someone on who's also on the radio. So very, very good episode.
Oh, and let me tell you, the easiest episode for me to edit ever.
Oh, I bet.
It's amazing how easy it is to edit someone who knows how to talk on the radio.
I bet. Absolutely. All right. Well, you can find all of our podcasts on iTunes, the Zune Marketplace. We're also on Stitcher Radio and TuneIn Radio. And most of those platforms allow you to leave ratings and or reviews. And if you like us, we'd really appreciate it if you do that. Then you can also come back and listen to this show live. We normally record Tuesday nights. We might be moving this a little bit to more the 8:30 p.m. time frame. That seems to be working a little bit better with our schedules. But your best bet is just to follow us on Twitter, and we always tweet when the show is going to be recording live for you to join us in the chat room and talk along with us while we record the show. But that's going to do it for episode 338. I'm Josh Pollard. He's Richard Gunther. And we'll be back next time for episode 339. Until then, adios.
Goodbye.